rising to a snowy. Each star its own aurora borealis. Suddenly you held me tight. I could see the mist.
Good morning. You are tuned to KBOO Portland, and the time now is 11 o'clock. Coming up next on The Boo, the radio zine introduces a new program, the Diane Wade House, a program dedicated to curbing the disparities for African-American women within the justice system. And at 11:30, we have Madness Radio, voices and visions from outside of mental health. KBOO programming is made possible by KBOO member listeners and support from Lavin and Levine, LLP, attorneys specializing in personal injury law. Lavin and Levine offices are located in Southeast Portland and Old Town Sherwood. More information available by phone at 503-946-8708 and online at lavinandlevine.com. And now stay tuned for the Diane Wade House.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor The Art of the Guillotine and other class horror stories on Friday, October 5th from 6 to 10 p.m. at the AFRU Gallery in Portland. In this exhibit, Shane Bugbee has created a variety of handmade flags with messages for the powers that be, sculptural works that include $10,000 of real shredded U.S. currency, detention center Liberty Shanks, and a life-size model of a guillotine. The opening features snacks, cake, and interactive performances. Again, that's The Art of the Guillotine and other class horror stories on Friday, October 5th, from 6 to 10 p.m. at the AFRU Gallery, 534 Southeast Oak Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events. The Art of the Guillotine and other class horrors. The AFRU Gallery in Portland. In this exhibit, Shane Bugbee has created a variety of handmade flags with messages for the powers that be, sculptural works that include $10,000 of real.
Hello, Mr. and Mrs. Radioland. I am Eldridge Cleaver, the former Minister of Information of the Black Panther Party. You are listening to KBOO Portland. This is listener-sponsored, non-commercial community radio. I want you to listen to and support KBOO because Portland needs it, you need it, and the world needs it. Ubalagani, boing, boing.
Hello and welcome. You are listening to KBOO, your community radio station. I'm your host, Delphine Crescenzo. This fall, Multnomah County and Bridges to Change, a local nonprofit, will open a brand new program dedicated to curbing the disparities for African American women involved with the justice system. The Diane Wade House Program, quote, will be the first of its kind transitional housing program for adult women involved in the criminal justice system in Multnomah County. The home will provide gender-responsive, trauma-informed services that are also Afrocentric. The residents who will be referred to the program will have access to culturally specific mental health stabilization and support services. End of quote. Last week, I got to sit with Onisha Cochran, Program Supervisor for the Diane Wade House, and Multnomah Chair Deborah Kafouri to discuss the new program and the services it will offer. It's a beautiful afternoon, and we are here to talk about a brand new program that Multnomah County and Bridges to Change are working on, collaborating on together. And so the program is called the Diane Wade House. Can we talk a little bit about what the house is and who it will serve? Onisha?
So the Diane Wade House is a transitional housing program for women. And the women who will be best served in this house are those who identify with addiction, homelessness, suffer from a mental illness, will be on probation or parole in Multnomah County. And the house is an Afrocentric house, but you do not have to be Black to be served at this house. But we are looking forward to serving at least 70% of the people housed in this house as an African American, Caribbean, person of color, however they choose to identify. And we say transitional housing program because it's not necessarily treatment, but each woman will be, they will have their own self-directed treatment plan. So like say a woman is a mother, or a woman doesn't have children and is more involved in domestic violence, or a woman did drugs, but she isn't necessarily severely addicted to drugs. So maybe severe addiction treatment plan isn't the right thing for her. So there'll be various programming for each woman, but they'll have a curfew. They will do programming, and we will hope to transition them into more permanent housing. In the house, they'll be served with a mentor. We'll have RAs, it'll be staffed 24 hours a day, and they will all be assigned a housing specialist whose only focus is to help them transition out of the house.
And so I believe about 38 women will be served at the house, and it will open in the fall, hopefully in November?
Yes, that is all correct, 38 beds, and it will open in the fall.
Okay, and so Deborah, could we hear a little bit from you as to why was it that Multnomah County is investing in this particular program at this time?
There are a couple of reasons. One is we've been working with the MacArthur Safety and Justice Challenge, which is a national initiative aimed at reducing unnecessary use of jail. And we know that if you look at the data, which we have very carefully, African Americans in particular are disproportionately affected by the criminal justice system. They're disproportionately represented in the criminal justice system. And the outcomes are not, they continue to spiral in and out of our system. We have tried many programs at Multnomah County that are open to everyone. And we see that in these programs, traditionally, whites do better and people of color do poorly. So it seems to be really a no-brainer that we would focus on creating a program that was designed for women of color, and specifically African-American women. The mentors all have lived experience. The women who work in, who will be working in this house, have been through the criminal justice system. They've suffered addiction from themselves and they're in recovery. They've had mental illness, all of the issues that the women who are in the house will be struggling with. So they will be able to see every day what success looks like, and that success looks like them, most importantly.
And so the house is named after Diane Wade. Would you talk, Onisha, a little bit about who she was and why it was chosen to name the house after her?
So Diane Wade was, she was an African-American parole officer for Multnomah County. And my first experience with her was she was bringing a program called the African-American Program into Coffee Creek. Mm-hmm. And I was an inmate there. And their whole idea of the program, the way it was explained to us, is that a lot of times people are released from prison and they see the parole officer as just an authority figure who's there to lock them up. So their idea was that if they came into the prison a year or 18 months before the person was supposed to parole and built a relationship with that person, then that person would be better apt and able to use the services and resources that a parole officer can provide. And it doesn't have to be this authoritative relationship. It could be a relationship that could help them rebuild their lives. And so that's what Diane Wade was for us, the women in Coffee Creek. She would come in and show us videos we would talk about them and dismantle them, things that affected the Black community, dysfunction in family and relationships, addiction, domestic violence, anything that would help us build our self-esteem and move away from criminal behaviors. Those are the things that she worked on with us. And she passed away in 2010, I think it was October, you know, before I was actually released from prison. And so I never got to work with her in the community, but that is how I built a relationship with her. Now, since we've named that house after Diane Wade, since that decision was made, everybody in the community has come with their own special story about who she was to them. Some of them on parole, some of them not on parole, but the stories are all parallel as to say that she cared deeply about her community. She treated people the way that she wanted to be treated, and she invested in women.
And so did the county make that decision then of naming her? You're not sure?
It was a collaborative effort. Many people, the Office of Consumer Engagement was meeting with different partners and Bridges to Change, and it was a collaborative effort. There have been a lot of people at the table to build what this house has come to be, and it's been ongoing for a long time. So it was a collaborative decision.
Would you actually talk a little bit about Bridges to Change? What is the role of the nonprofit and how you ended up collaborating with Multnomah County on that house?
Okay, so the backstory about how Bridges to Change came into the county is something that I can't really speak to. But Bridges to Change in itself, since 2004, has been serving the community with houses similar to this one. And as part of the programming came to a head, they actually did a focus group on how Bridges to Change was serving African-American women in the community. And the score wasn't that well, you know. And Bridges to Change themselves, the executive director, Monta, and Shelly Mead, they both expressed that that's something that they wanted to change. They were very transparent with me. They were very humble and compassionate that in the past, in history, we haven't served African-American women well, but we want to change that. And we want to work with you to change that. And we don't know how that's going to happen, but we're here to support you. And that's one thing that I've honored the most about Bridges to Change, is that they haven't tried to fix us. They have said, we want to stand with you because this affects us and we want to be a part of change.
Right. So will you talk a little bit more about the different kind of services that you are going to be providing, and why it's so important to have that wide variety of programs, from mental health to addiction to whatever else is available for these women?
So the exciting thing about this house is that it is somewhere safe that is going to be decorated into a way that reflects their beauty, and they will have a curfew, and it will be treated like a home, so to speak. They will have a group in the morning, a wake up, or what you say, a breakfast club, and they'll do a check-in, and they'll all go around and they'll talk about their goals for the day. There's also going to be a day center connected to the housing area, and they can go to different programming there, but we aren't going to limit their programming there. We're encouraging them to go and do parenting classes, NA and AA, any kind of classes that are going to enhance them. The mentors that will be on site, there will be three mentors on site, plus the housing specialist, plus the RAs, who all have lived experience. So they will have constant support. The RA's role is like a supporting role, to sit there in their day-to-day activities, teaching them how to cook, holding them accountable to keep the areas clean. And when there's conflict, of course, or de-escalation of anxiety and things of that nature. But I think that's what's going to make the program so exciting, is because it's flexible, it's meeting the needs of each individual, and it's encouraging them to work on their recovery, whatever that may look like for them, and to use outside community resources. It's not just, it's going to keep them comfortable, but it's also used to connect them to all the resources that are available here in Portland, and there are a lot.
Right. And so the house is going to be Afrocentric. Can you talk about the importance of having services that are culturally specific? Deborah explained, you know, that the rest of the programming that is usually offered that is more Eurocentric gets certain folks to be successful, but others not. So what does that mean?
So it's not very different from some of, like Nora has been doing amazing things with having a you know, treatment centers and clinics that are culturally specific to the Native American culture. And you talk to the Native American people in the community and they say, I feel at home here. Right. You know, I feel honored here. I see myself here. So the Afrocentric program isn't really that different. It's paralleled with the Afrocentric decoration. The people that they see will be Afrocentric. And just to talk about the elephant in the room, a lot of times the black women that go to treatment and are deemed as incorrigible, unable to change, have an attitude, aggressive, intimidating, right. Or they are very quiet and timid, and they don't speak up. They don't know how to use their voice. So being able to work with people who look like them and can identify because they have that same live life experience, mm-hmm. Our hope is that we can connect with those women on a different level and engage them into self-sufficient services that can help them become better and not need these services anymore. Right. We want to work ourselves right. out of a job is right, what our right, goal
right.
is.
Right, for sure. And so talk then a little bit more about what this means for you as someone with lived experience, the fact that you are giving value and then, you know, hired actually in order to be able to share your lived experience with women who are struggling in the same way.
Oh, what this means for me is like a dream come true. I never in a million years thought that there would be a program like this mm-hmm. for someone like me and that I would be trusted and honored to be a part of it, let alone be the program supervisor. I was that girl that was always kicked out of the treatment, told that I was intimidating and aggressive, left the penitentiary after serving 15 years, and the correctional officers told me, you will be back. Because I have built this history and I believed it within myself. So I connected to the people in my community and they had those same behaviors in the past and they showed me how they changed. And so that made a believer out of me. Mm-hmm. And I said, I'm gonna go back to school and I'm gonna get my degree and I'm gonna be a part of this system that is serving my people because we need this. And so I just thank God that I followed the path that those women showed me so that I could be here when this opportunity came.
Mm-hmm. Thank you so much for sharing this. And then I just want to go to you, Deborah. Then, why is it so important then to be able to hire folks and to give value, as much value as you would give to someone who you know might just only have the degree? Onisha's got both.
We have there's kind of two sides to this question. There's the theoretical, we know it works. We've seen data and, you know, we can give you numbers and we can talk about the importance of having peer mentors and having people who have the lived experience. But on the flip side of it is really the human side of it. And it makes so much sense if you think about it. You're going to learn better from somebody who understands what you're going through. Sitting down and talking with somebody who has a bunch of initials after their name, so they got a lot of degrees because they read about something in a book, that's all well and good. But if someone can say to you, I was there, I was on that street, I was high out of my mind on that street corner, and I said I didn't want to do it anymore, and they can talk you through what it meant to them and what they did, it's gonna make such a much have such a lasting impact. And we know that recovery is a journey. It's not, you don't get a piece of paper and you're done. It's constant. You need to continue to work at it. You need to build a support system around you. And these women in this program are going to go, they're going to be back in their communities. They're going to be reunited with their families. And they need to have that continual support from people around them that says, you can do it. You are awesome. You are beautiful. You are loved. You are valued.
And so historically, where has been the record of the county when dealing with African women in particular, and what do you hope this will affect? You talked a little bit about that earlier, but could you go a little bit more in detail as to what you feel it will change?
Sure, and I think Onisha talked about it too, is there's you know, stereotypical responses that we've heard from black women who've gone through programs that they're just not willing to change or they don't really want it. Well, they don't see that the program that they're being offered is helpful to them. And so I really believe we've made a lot of changes at Multnomah County over the past few years, really investing in culturally specific services across all the services we provide, whether it's prenatal care and pregnancy care, and then baby support for African American women in our community, the Healthy Birth Initiative. We have changed our Sun School programs to hire more more staff and to invest in the culturally specific work of, say, SEI or NEA, Latino Network, to work with kids in those schools. And we're really doing it across the system. So it makes perfect sense that we would do it with the public safety system as well.
So the house is getting ready to open. And can you talk a little bit about how women will be referred then into the program? I don't believe this is something that people can just sign themselves up to.
That is correct. So they will be referred through their parole officers, through probation, through DCJ, and through other departments within the county. They can't just sign themselves up. They have to go through a process. And I also wanted to piggyback on a question that you talked about earlier about how they receive services from us as live life people with live life experience and who look like them. And I also want to say we also will be able to connect them to other services. Throughout my work as being a mentor, I don't want to devalue the relationships that I created with doctors and with therapists. And like Deborah said, with people who can offer women prenatal care, there was a distrust in the system, but like also like Deborah said, there are a lot of changes, and I think we need to honor those changes that are being made. And Erica Pruitt said in the meeting, she said this doesn't really feel just like a program, it feels like a movement. And I hope that we're moving more toward connecting and building that trust, because we can't, and the journey of recovery can't be done with mentors alone. At some point, the mentor can help you get off the drugs and can show you different styles of dress and how to communicate your emotions, but you may need to get therapy. And so all of those things are very important, that we can role model what it looks like to begin to trust a little bit at a time the system that we all have to work under, and see and honor the changes that they are making as well.
What do you feel would be then the long-lasting effect, you know, on the community to have such a program? And you're talking about trying to work yourself out of a job. Do you see more houses like this being needed, or do you see maybe that would be, you know, just the first step to then having the community really see, you know, the need for investing more?
Well, we always know that we always think, well, I'm just one person, what change can I make? But Oregon has been the trend center in the recovery process, like putting mentors in the hospital. There's hospitals coming from LA to figure out how that works. Building a house like this, I've already heard rumors that an African-American man house is being created right now through VOA. So I think more houses, and also the work that we are doing with these women. If a woman finds recovery in this house and she goes home and she talks to her man and her or her woman or her mother or her family, then I'm married to a woman. I got clean first and then she got clean. Mm-hmm. I believe that recovery is a spirit, and it trickles down to the people that you love and you surround yourself with. I got clean because women surrounded me and they told me that I was enough and that they told me that I could do it. As long as we're planting that seed and that spirit into women, they are going to go all over this city and they're going to continue to plant it in everyone that loves them and surrounds them.
Right. Yes, Deborah.
I was just going to add that it's great to think about having additional houses and moving forward, but we really want to be intentional with this one.
Right.
There's so much energy and so much enthusiasm around this program and this house that we have to make it work. We have to make it work. It's really imperative for us as the county, and for Onisha and the women who are going to be in and Bridges to Change that are going to be working here. Traditionally, in our community, and I think it's important that we just call it out, we have failed. The dominant culture have failed people of color. We create programs for them, mm-hmm. and then, you know, a couple years later, the budget cuts come and they go away. Right. Well, that can't happen. This is not just about the women who are in this house right now. This is about rebuilding the long-term trust with our community. And I get really emotional talking about it because I feel so passionate about making sure that this is successful.
Mm-hmm. And also, Onisha, I wanted to thank you for mentioning some of the other culturally specific programming that exist. Also because, you know, wanting to ensure that, you know, you mentioned you don't have to be African American to be part, but then also folks have several identities. So you might be black and you might be something else also. Mm-hmm. So being able to allow people to just be themselves in their full complexity as well.
That is correct. But the programming will be Afrocentric. The house will be Afrocentric. Right. And so the people that will be screened and asked to be a part of the program, they will have to be somebody that will be comfortable in that atmosphere, because we want them to get recovery too. And if they don't feel comfortable there, then, but that part will not change.
Right. That's great. That is exactly what's needed. So tell us again, when is the program opening, and then maybe where could people learn about it? And are you looking for volunteers or for folks to get involved in any kind of ways with the program?
So not at this time do I have detailed information about volunteers. And to find information about the program, you can look on Multnomah County web. Mm-hmm. And the programming will be opening in the fall.
In the fall. Cool. Great. Is there anything else that you wanted to say about the program or about the experience in general?
Well, I just think that it's really awesome to be able to meet so many people, so many white people who are invested in our community and who are willing to stand up in their courage and call it like it is and invest in this fight. And I just want to honor their courage to stand beside us and not try to fix it, but get in the mud with us and say, let's figure this out together. I got your back. It's been a long time, and it feels good to see that.
Right. Not try to actually give you solutions already prepackaged,
exactly,
but actually tell you, here are resources.
Yes.
Do it yourself.
Yes, absolutely.
Great. That's great to hear. Deborah, any final words?
Well, I think you can see that there's a lot of enthusiasm from all parties involved. And we will be, we hope that you follow up with us in a year and see how things are going.
Yeah.
I'm sure we'll have a lot to talk about.
Wonderful. Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you both so much for taking the time to speak with me. For more information about the Diane Wade House, you can go to bridgestochange.com or visit the Multnomah County website at multco.us. The Diane Wade House will serve 38 women who are involved in the justice system, and they will be referred either by Multnomah County Department of Community Justice or by Multnomah County Mental Health and Addiction Services. Of the 38 beds, 21 were funded by the John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation through the Safety and Justice Challenge, which is a national challenge that seeks to reduce over-reliance on jail. Multnomah County has also received a $2 million grant that they will use over the next 2 years to support this effort to try to reduce unnecessary incarceration in the county. Thank you so much for listening. For KBOO, I'm Delphine Crescenzo.
Ever wonder what happens to your Fred Meyer reward points? Now you can turn them into excellent community radio by linking your Fred Meyer rewards card to KBOO. Look up KBOO or our ID number 86634 at fredmeyer.com/community rewards. Every time you use your card, KBOO will get money. Your rebates, discounts, and gas bonuses are unaffected. With your Fred Meyer reward card, you can even turn cat litter into support for KBOO. Go to fredmeyer.com/community rewards, all one word, and link your card to KBOO.
Meow.
KBOO hosts a monthly film series at the Clinton Street Theater called KBOO at the Clinton. This month, on Thursday, October 11th at 7 p.m., we'll celebrate Dia de los Muertos. Muertos Film and Music Night will highlight some of the Dia de los Muertos traditions of Mexico, Central and South America. We'll screen authentic Day of the Dead short films and feature live performances by Virginia Lopez, Mariachi Portland, and more. Again, that's a film celebration of Dia de los Muertos, Thursday, October 11th at 7 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater, 2522 Southeast Clinton Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
What does it mean to be called crazy in a crazy world? Listen to Madness Radio, Voices and Visions from Outside Mental Health, an affiliate of Mad in America Radio, broadcasting on KBOO in Oregon, sponsored by Portland Hearing Voices and the Icarus Project, and syndicated on the Pacifica Network. Madness Radio is online at kboo.fm/madnessradio and at madinamerica.com. Welcome to Madness Radio. This is your host, Will Hall. Today, my guest is Olga Runciman. Olga is a psychiatric nurse in Denmark who has worked in long-term psychiatric care institutions. She's also a psychiatric survivor diagnosed with paranoid schizophrenia, and today she works as a psychologist in private practice. So welcome to Madness Radio, Olga Runciman.
Well, thank you very much for inviting me, Will.
Okay, maybe you can just give us a little bit of a capsule summary. How did you get this? I mean, I guess that's kind of like the worst diagnosis that you can have, paranoid schizophrenic. I mean, that's like horror movies and, you know, serial killers. I mean, that's the worst sort of label that can be put on someone. How did you end up getting that diagnosis?
Well, so very briefly, I've heard voices all my life. I struggled. I've had lots of things happen to me, like so many others, of traumatic characters. I've been abused, sexually abused, all bullied. I've been sent off at the age of 8 to a boarding school, which is where the abuse occurred, and things like that. So I have that story, and I developed voices from a very early age. I managed to, survive, and they were actually helping me. I didn't understand them, but I always view them, and now today when I do understand them, I see that they kept me.